Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Badger fans, and welcome to another episode of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. On today's show, we are going to do the Bucky's Fifth Podcast Awards. We're going to talk about our favorite moments of the season, best plays of the season, our favorite newcomers, MVPs, all sorts of stuff because it is award season. Obviously, everyone's getting their nominations, All-Americans, you know, Heisman. Obviously, we might touch on that a little bit here. And then at the end of the show, we will talk about that basketball game because I'm sure you guys would rather talk about football than what we just watched at the rec center out in New Jersey against Rutgers. The Badgers have dropped their last three games in that building, and it was not pretty doing so. So Matt and I figured we'd rather just get right into the awards. And if you guys want to stick around and listen to us complain about the basketball team, you're more than welcome to. So welcome to the Bucky's Podcast show. Matt, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing good. You know, obviously we're going to talk about it later, but the basketball team wasn't great today, but a lot of good football talk today, I'm figuring. How are you doing?
Oh yeah. Good. I'm excited to talk about it. I think this, you know, kind of awards season recap type thing will be a lot of fun, and I'm interested to hear because we didn't discuss this beforehand. These are both going to be our thoughts, and I'll be interested to see where we differ and then where we might have the same. So it should be fun. But I wanted to first ask you about, obviously we're talking awards, Jonathan Taylor not getting a Heisman invite. I was a little, not super surprised, but a little surprised just given the guys who made it. I didn't really think Jalen Hurts was going to get an invite to New York. He ends up getting it, and Jonathan Taylor, despite three dominating seasons in the Big Ten, was left off once again. So the likely he's going pro, and one of the best running backs ever in college football did not get an invite to the Heisman, which is unfortunate. Obviously it happens, but still kind of crazy. So what were your thoughts on that?
You know, I wasn't overly surprised that he didn't get it this year. I think, you know, statistically speaking, in rushing numbers, it was his lowest output for rushing yards. I mean, he still got the bowl game to go, but he had a complete year, both in catching the ball as well as rushing. 21 rushing touchdowns is absurd. And then you pair that with another couple in through the air with five. It's no doubt a big season for him, and he kind of went out and proved what he needed to for the pros, but it would have been nice to see him in New York. But you look, and the four guys who are going there are all going to be competing in the playoff. They're all having a chance for a national title here. So I think I'm not super surprised given the fact that it's kind of catered towards quarterbacks now, as well as the fact that the playoff lays very heavily in this decision-making, I think, nowadays compared to what it was even just a few years ago pre-playoff.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the Heisman has just kind of turned into that type of award that maybe is obviously quarterback-oriented. I know we've talked about it a couple times on this, but like 17 of the last 19 have been quarterbacks, some absurd number like that. And then obviously in an award where you now have a playoff, you want your stars up for that so you can – you know, in the pregame intro, say Heisman nominee against Heisman nominee when Joe Burrow and Jalen Hurts square off. So it's going to be interesting to watch. Obviously, the four guys that did go are super deserving, and it's probably Joe Burrow's to lose. I know he's a heavy favorite in terms of betting odds, as he's been for the last 5-6 weeks, really. So he wouldn't have won the award, but it does kind of suck for JT to have just three incredible seasons back to back to back. And I know the award isn't a career award, but it would have been nice to see him get to New York at least once. But what can you really do, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the craziest part, is that he may come home with his second Doak Walker Award win on Saturday, but he's not going to have gone to New York to represent for the Heisman once in one of the best, like you said, careers of running back in history.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think JT will be just fine with a possible second Doak Walker and probably a prosperous NFL career coming up, and of course a Rose Bowl appearance. So a good finish to his season despite the disappointing, and I don't think you'll hear any complaints from JT or Coach Chris. But let's get into the awards. Obviously, kind of a season recap. Everybody knows the record, 10-3, going to the Rose Bowl, Big Ten West champ. So we're not going to recap all that. Obviously, you guys know the numbers and you know the wins, losses. You watched it all just like we did. So we're going to go over and we're going to start first with our top plays from each segment of the football season. So our top special teams, offensive and defensive plays. And we'll kick it off, no pun intended, with special teams. So, Matt, yep. What was your top special teams play of the 2019 season?
I actually just dropped this today on the site for special teams with a look back at the top five plays. Really, it was six when I threw in the honorable mention, but I went with Aaron Cruickshank's kickoff return. I think that play was just so huge in terms of tipping the momentum back away from Nebraska after Nebraska had just kind of came out the gates hot, dominating the Wisconsin in all facets. Wisconsin looked like they weren't going to be able to do anything offensively. And then all of a sudden, boom, he makes that huge play to, I think it was 89-yard kickoff return to kind of spark the team and help them kind of pull away in the end, give them the boost needed to know, okay, we can get going here. I just felt like everything kind of flipped there when he did that. It was the first time since 2015 that they had a kickoff return. So it was definitely big, and you really got a glimpse of what he could do when he gets the ball in his hands. And it also led to Cruickshank getting more opportunities as the year went on as well.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I had that one written down, but I went with the Cruickshank reversal. I can't even remember who the other person was in that Minnesota game.
Isaac Garendo.
Yeah, Isaac Garendo. I think that one, while it didn't go for a touchdown, I thought, you know, in terms of the timing that they pulled that out for the first time of the season, worked so well. So I think it was just so timely in that game. It was, you know, still close. Momentum was kind of up in the air. And obviously that play was a huge momentum shift, just given that the Badgers scored a couple plays later against the Gophers. So that's what I had, but I had both of those written down. So I was interested to see, where did you have that one on your list? I didn't get a chance to read it.
That was number four. Zach Hintz's absolute bomb from 62 yards out was number two. So shout out to kickers. So you go, Zach Hintz.
There we go. Well, there you have it. Obviously, Aaron Cruickshank heavily involved in our special teams play. Let's get into defensive play. Top defensive play for you in this 2019 season.
Yeah, so this one will actually come out today, I guess you could say, because when you're listening to this, it'll be Thursday. So I went with the Chris Orr stuff. You know, obviously Nate Stanley going for the 2-point conversion. Iowa had just hit on that big 75-yard strike from Stanley to I think it was Tyrone Tracy. Yeah. And they went ahead, scored quickly. Wisconsin was just kind of thrown from at that point. But in the end, Wisconsin was able to stop them. I think the big reason I went with it was just because of the way that Chris Orr backed up what he did in talking about it afterwards, talking about he isn't squatting 600 pounds and whatnot, was very cool. And so that, to me, that was the biggest play, just because of like you said, the timeliness of it and the impact that it had, because Wisconsin only ended up winning by 2 points. What do you got?
Yeah, I agree. That's what I had down too, but I'll touch on another one since I think I'm going to use that play maybe for a later award. So I'll touch on another one. I thought in terms of another timely play that kind of flipped the game, the Reggie Pearson forced fumble against Michigan was a huge one, just given that obviously Michigan had that long play to open the game and get down and look like they were about to even up the score against the Badgers. And then that play where he basically, you know, Pearson got his helmet in there, knocked that ball loose, and the Badgers were able to jump on it. I think it flipped just the entire script of that Michigan game, where if the Wolverines would have scored, I think they would have finally got some confidence. But just going back to when Michigan was, you know, really not clicking on all cylinders like they have later in the season, a big part of that was turnovers. And I think that, you know, punch out in the, basically within, I think it was around the 8-10 yard line, you know, when they're about to, you know, knock it in for 7 points and get this game evened up, it ended up being just a huge momentum flipper. And so that's what I had down as my, I kind of had those 1A and 1B. I don't think you can really beat the Chris Orr play, just given how big of a moment that was, but I had that one down too. And then I had another honorable mention of the Noah Burks pick six against Northwestern, but that just wasn't as timely as those other two. So congratulations to Chris Orr on that goal line stand for getting the Buckeyes fifth podcast defensive play of the year award.
Yeah. Eric Burrell was right in there too. So credit to him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We've got those two down and out. And now this one, I think, was a little bit more challenging for me to decide on. Obviously the defensive one was, had some huge moments, but the top offensive play, what did you have down for your top offensive play of 2019?
Oh man, there's so many of them. You know, I think you can go with a lot of different plays. I think for me, I would have to say I always love it when the Badgers bust out the reverse calls. Wisconsin had that multiple times. I think the one where we saw that Kendrick Pryor went for 66 yards, that was a thing of beauty. I thought that was such a cool play. Just the way that the play is set up and develops with linemen out in front and knocking guys over as bowling pins. It's always cool to see and watching them go. I know it was against Michigan State and it was late in the game, so it didn't really impact things, but it was one of those, you know, if you remember the salt gif where he just dropped some salt, it was like, man, let's just pile drive Michigan State late. And it was cool to see.
Yeah, that one was a great play. That was obviously like you said, a capper for Wisconsin to finish off really another solid game against a team that at that point was still Michigan State, a still strong Michigan State team coming into that game. They had been disappointing, but they had an opportunity to, of course, maybe save their season and turn around a little bit. And obviously that didn't happen with Michigan State just finishing out at 6-6. But at that moment, it just felt like a big statement win, just given that the Badgers had kind of been on a run of lately, obviously with the Michigan win and the Kent State win mixed in there. And then, of course, you beating Michigan State too. So coming into the season, when we expected those two games to maybe be toss-ups and maybe the Ohio State one be chalked up in there with that, those both games, and of course the Michigan State one was huge. So I like that choice. Mine, I had a little bit of trouble with. I kind of going off my defensive, you know, play of the year, I think the Jonathan Taylor run against Michigan for 70 some yards the couple plays later was a big one. But really, I think to me, the one that stuck out the most was Jack Cohn's just dime of a throw to Quintez Cephas in that Minnesota game. I think that was the play that got me most excited, just in the moment and the way it was executed, and just probably his best throw of the season to his top target, you know, in a big spot. Was awesome to see just Jack cut it loose and take the top off Minnesota's defense. So I had to go with that one just given the moment. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, I think that's definitely one that's right up there, just given everything that went into it and how big it was in the crucial time. I would also say like the touchdown passes to Cephas right away against Central Michigan, where Wisconsin was kind of steamrolling them. But we didn't really know what Quintez Cephas was going to bring to the table this season after the offseason turmoil. To see him go out there and drop 130 and two touchdowns against Central Michigan on a couple of just pretty catches, and to see just how excited the fans were when that happened was awesome. So I would also throw those in as honorable mention as well.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. There's been a lot of, you know, a lot of defensive plays stood out in the moment, but there was a lot of good offensive plays that you could recollect. I think just from execution standpoint and timeliness, that entire Minnesota game seemed to be, you know, well executed with the screen passes and the end arounds and everything like that. And there's a lot of offensive plays that you could probably make an argument for just given the season, you know, and the way it kind of shook out. So I was curious to see where we would both go with, just because there's, you know, so many great options from a team that executed pretty well on the offensive side of the football.
Yeah, I think it's pretty telling that we went kind of in different routes with it. It tells you just kind of how good the offense was at times this year, and was kind of a revelation after last season where there was times when they just really couldn't do anything, and it really left you scratching your head with some subpar quarterback play.
Right, exactly. You know, we both talked about obviously the need to mix it up coming into the season and get a little bit more flashy and get back to what Wisconsin had been doing in those Monte Ball, Melvin Gordon, James White days with all the mix and match. And Joe Rudolph and Paul Chris, credit to them, they certainly got back to that, and it obviously made a big difference from, you know, 8-5 to a 10-3 in a Rose Bowl appearance. Let's get into some, you know, newcomers, and obviously this doesn't necessarily, obviously doesn't have to be a freshman. You know, this can award, I think we kind of both thought was more of a guy that was not a huge impact player last season that emerged into, you know, a key part of this team. So who was your defensive newcomer of the year?
I think I'm going to go with two different guys just because it was hard for me to pick one. I know that's kind of hedging a bit, but at the same time, I thought Reggie Pearson had a tremendous year. You know, he didn't have any interceptions, but he had 3.5 tackles for loss, had a couple forced fumbles, was fourth on the team in tackles, and was absolutely able to just deliver some huge hits. You know, I think back to that Nebraska tackle where he just blew up a tunnel screen at the 1 yard line to keep them from scoring. He, you know, obviously the huge hit against Michigan where Dylan McCaffrey will probably never forget. It's one of those things where he's had a great year and really gave a glimpse of what he could do in the future. And then the other guy who really just kind of burst on the scene, I think people thought he might get a few minutes here or there, but I don't think anybody saw what Keanu Benton was going to do coming. You know, I mean, he played so well this year, basically starting for the better half of the season after Bryson Williams was down for the past 6-7 games. So he got some sacks. He was good in run coverage. He looks like a guy who's going to be a good one for the Badgers, and they hit on an in-state guy in a big way. I know he had 2 sacks. And then he also had a couple quarterback hurries. So I would say those two really jumped out to me. Who do you got?
I've got, you know, I wrote down Reggie Pearson as well. He was probably my number two choice, but I had to go with obviously Jack Sanborn. He played very sparingly last year and was obviously a huge impact player for the defense this year. 70 some tackles, I think 5.5 or 6 sacks, was right up there with Chris Orr at a position that, coming into the season, I think both you and I knew Jack Sanborn was pretty talented and was going to fill that role nicely the way, and, you know, just given the history of Wisconsin linebackers' ability to develop. But I didn't really expect him to have that dominating of a season that maybe wasn't as flashy as the Chris Orr plays or the, you know, the Zach Bond sacks or, you know, the Garrett Rands and Isaiah Loudermilk, you know, defensive presence on the line. But Jack Sanborn was kind of one of those guys that, you know, came in, you know, lunch pail type guy, came in, made the plays, and maybe didn't get as much praise as he should have, but came to work every day and put in the work, kind of like, you know, one of my favorite Badgers of all time, Ryan Connolly. So I had to go with Jack Sanborn, and anytime I can work Ryan Connolly into the podcast episode, I'm a happy man. What about you? He's one of my favorites ever, so. But yeah, I think all three of those guys are good choices. I mean, they all were huge for this defense, you know, this season and coming into next season will be impact guys that are now proven and guys that we can talk about, you know, with more excitement and less question marks than we had at the beginning of the season.
For sure.
All right. Let's get into our offensive newcomer of the year then. This one was kind of hard for me, I'm not going to lie, until I really thought about it. So who was your offensive newcomer of the year?
I think there's a couple different guys who could get this award. I think, obviously, you know, Cephus coming back and kind of jumping in there, I don't think he necessarily qualifies in my book for it. I think Nakia Watson had a solid year, rushing for over 300 yards and 2 touchdowns. But I think I'm actually going to go with Mason Stocky. You know, I think both him and John Chennault had their moments at fullback. They both had some nice plays. I thought Mason Stocky, really, the way he played against Minnesota, making some nice catches. He had that diving catch, had some nice runs. He was a guy who was an X factor at times, given his blocking ability. He's a guy who can really road grade, you know, give some space for Jonathan Taylor to run. And I thought he did a tremendous job going forward. And I think, you know, going ahead, him and John Chennault will probably get a lot more touches next season, as we're not totally sure how Wisconsin's going to pivot without Jonathan Taylor in the fold. Who do you got?
Yeah, I like both of those picks. I had those guys written down. And as you mentioned at the beginning, I didn't know if we could use Quintez Cephus on it. But that's who I had, just given that he wasn't with the team last year. But I think we all knew what he could be on the offensive side of the football. It was just more a matter of fact of would he be the same player when he came back. So if that counts as a newcomer, I'm not sure. And then
I'll give it to you.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was like, this one, maybe not. And then, you know, the fullbacks I had written down as well, because obviously Jonathan Taylor has been around for years and we all know the names, and the other receivers are, you know, veteran guys that have been around. So it was kind of, and same with Jake Ferguson. So it was kind of, you know, touchy to try and figure out. And then of course you've got some guys on the offensive line. But I like the fullback picks, and I think both of those guys are going to be solid options going forward, similar to what we had, obviously, with Alec Ingold and those guys. But I think you're going to, like you said, see those guys maybe get more touches next season, because we're not sure where this offense is going to go in terms of running the football. So I like those, but I still went with Cephus on a technicality that way.
No. You do you, man. I think that's fair. I thought some of the two interior guards at times played well, in Seltzner and Lyles. I thought they both had shown flashes of what they could do, and being able to kind of carry the load as well at the guard. I couldn't pick Logan Bruss just simply because I think he played too much last year. But yeah, I think the offensive line as a whole showed that they do have some good depth and youth in the wings, as it looks like Tyler Biadasz is, I would assume, gone, and you're going to have guys like David Mormon also moving on, and Jason Erdman. So there's going to be space for those guys to play a lot next year, and I thought they did enough to give the coaching staff some flashes of their potential.
Absolutely. Yeah, those big boys deserve some mention. They don't get enough love. Obviously, Wisconsin fans probably appreciate their linemen more than most fan bases, but they never get enough love that they deserve. So, guys, we're going to get back into some awards after a quick commercial break. All right, we've talked our newcomers. We've talked our plays of the year. Now we're going to get into a little bit different. We're going to get to our MVPs. But the next one I wanted to ask was more so moments of the season. Obviously, the first one I have written down is, what moment would you like to change of this 2019 season? So maybe a negative. Obviously, there's certain ones that come to mind where I don't know if this was going to be a hard one to figure out, but what moment would you, if you could go back and change it and maybe start the game over from that point or something, what play would you go to, or what moment would you go to?
That is a tough one. You could go back to the game that was just played against Ohio State and point to a couple, you know, the fake punt that kind of just changed everything, as the Badgers had looked so good and everything there. But then I think it has to be at some point in Illinois. You know, Wisconsin just missed some tackles, wasn't able to take advantage of some plays, and it was one of those where it just kind of left you scratching your head. I think, in all honesty, the time where it makes me really wish it didn't happen was late in the game where we threw the interception, or I guess I didn't throw the interception. Jack Cohn threw the interception. I think that was just like a absolute backbreaker and gave Illinois a fighting chance, even though Wisconsin had the ball with a lead. And that, I think, just taking away that one interception and, running the ball and punting it away. And I think that game actually ends totally differently, and Wisconsin's able to get out of there by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah, that's what I had down too. I think that's kind of the obvious one, but it's definitely the most painful one. But thankfully, there's not a lot of other options because this team played pretty well throughout the season. But obviously, that one, both the turnovers in the Illinois game were costly. And I think if you could go back to either one and flip that game, it probably goes differently. Maybe you escape that one with a win, and then you go and you win the rest of them, and you obviously lose at Ohio State the following week, but then maybe you're going to the Big Ten championship game with one loss. And if you win that game and make a few more plays in that one, you could be in a playoff conversation. So while it's tough, obviously, to rethink about those, and obviously I think it's a pretty glaring moment in the season, this team kind of bounced back. And I think that's what makes college football so fun and so interesting, is just the fact that one little play like that or one little miscue can change not only a game or a drive or a quarter, but it can change the entire outcome of your season. So that's, where it differs from the pro level, and why I think I love it so much, is that every snap matters, every quarter matters, every game matters. And it's just one of those things that we'll look back in probably 10 years and think kind of what could have happened if you could go back and change it. But unfortunately, you just can't.
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head there.
That one stuck out to me pretty well. So I had that all ready to go and ready to fire off, because it's burned in between my temples. Just I can rewatch that interception and that fumble without having to turn the highlights on. You can just see it, and it's seared in there. But let's talk about more positives. Obviously, we'll get to our MVPs in a little bit, but I first want to talk about, obviously, we just talked about negative moments that we could change. But what was just kind of your culminative favorite moment of this season?
I think for me, it was seeing Chris Orr absolutely sprint to go grab that axe. In talking with him before the season at Wisconsin Media Day, he was fired up to talk about the axe and how much it meant to get that back and how much it stung last season. And to see him running across the field, as like a little kid was super joyous, and it was super cool to see. And you got to feel good for the Badgers to kind of rebound the way they did and still go ahead and take care of the West Division and get it back, and to go ahead and do it in Minnesota against a rival on game day. It hits you right in the feels for a lot of those guys, and it was cool to see.
Yep, that was mine too. I totally agree. I had the goal, or not the goal line, but the 2-point conversion stand by Chris Orr against Iowa, just simply because it kept them alive for that Big Ten West hunt, but you can't deny the fact of just the I had just the players getting the axe backs in general was so cool to see, with, like you said, game day, battle for the Big Ten West. Obviously, the excitement was there from the fan base, and just to get that back after such a heartbreaking, just blowout last season, where they got it for the first time in forever, and all the hype that Minnesota had, it just felt so it felt so good. And I can't imagine, as obviously it felt great for us as the fans, but I can't imagine how it felt for those, seniors and those guys that have put in a lot of time and made some great plays and won a lot of football games. Obviously, if they were to lose that game, it would have really been a downer on this season that has turned out to be pretty well. So I don't think you can really make a lot of arguments for any other ones, just given how special that moment was. Would you agree?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All righty. Well, let's get into, obviously, that we've got our favorite moments now. So it's time to, of course, do our MVPs. We've got our special teams, and then we'll do our defensive, and then our offensive MVPs, and then maybe we can pick our overall, MVP of the team, because I'm interested to see kind of where we go with this. So what did you have down first for your special teams MVP?
I would say for special teams, I think Aaron Cruickshank is obviously up there, but I'll go with Zach Hintz. Just the way he was able to command the kickoff unit was so great. I think he ended up with like 63 kickoffs through the end zone. Just, getting touchbacks is huge. It limits the opportunities for other teams to take advantage of your defense and get out there with better field position. And then obviously the 62-yarder to flip the script and really give the team momentum when they were, pushed to the brink against Purdue in a lot of ways. So I thought that was such a cool moment. He obviously tied or got the school record in terms of field goal yardage, and to also just dominate the way he has all season long in kickoffs. I'm gonna go with him.
I like that pick too. That's who I had written down too. I know it's not as flashy as Aaron Cruickshank, and I think Cruickshank's probably the easy answer, just given that he was the leader in return yards. He had the return for a touchdown. So stats wise, yeah, he's the guy. But Zach Hintz, like you said, it wasn't maybe the most important thing, and people probably don't realize it. But anytime you've got a guy that can boom it through the end zone every time, where your coverage team doesn't have to worry about a return, doesn't have to worry about a play getting busted open and taking back for 6 or 7 points, that's a huge difference. And I know it's not the flashiest play, it's just a kickoff, and most fans are probably checking their phones or doing something else at the time or not really paying attention to it. But in the grand scheme of football, it makes a big difference. So I really like that pick.
Yeah, and I mean the 62-yard field goal is super impressive, but I was almost more impressed when after the Noah Burks 68-yard touchdown that you had talked about against Northwestern, he went ahead, Noah Burks had a little extra celebration that led to a 15-yard penalty, and they backed it up 15 yards from the opposite 20. He still booted it through the end zone. So that was super impressive from him to end that play as well.
Yeah, who would have thought the kickoff specialist gets so much praise on this? But there were a lot of defining moments, and obviously that field goal and his kickoffs were impressive. But that field goal is going to probably be something that we see on that Wisconsin football intro for years to come, just given how cool it was and how big of a momentum swing it was to hit something like that. So kudos to the boot of Zach Hintz. All right. Let's do defensive MVP. There's a couple choices here. I'm interested to see what we got down for those. So who do you have for your defensive MVP?
All right, you go first because I'm grappling with a couple different
Oh,
guys.
sure. That's kind of what I was doing too. But I had to go with Chris Orr on this one. I think just the stats are probably even with some other guys. I think he had 72 tackles, and you can talk about the stats and the numbers for him. So yeah, 72 tackles, 32 assisted, and 40 solos, and 11 and a half sacks is obviously crucial to this team's success and the forced fumbles throughout the season. But I also think just from a leadership standpoint, he was the catalyst for this defense, a kind of a tie-all that, obviously we all know Chris Orr, very vocal, very talkative, likes to, trash talk and talk to the media, and that's fun for us media guys, because I had a chance to talk to him a couple times throughout the season. And then down at Big Ten Media Days, he was, on full display as being a talkative and leader, and just a guy that really embraced that role and leading the defense, making the calls, making sure the guy's in the right place. I think it's too fitting for it to not be Chris Orr. So I'll turn the table to you.
Yeah, he was definitely one of the guys that I was trying to figure out between. So just for the contrarian perspective, I'll just go with Zach Bond. I think it's either one. You're just splitting hairs in between the two of them. But for him, for an outside linebacker to be only one tackle away from the team lead is crazy. You would normally in Wisconsin's scheme think of the inside linebackers kind of taking care of most of those tackles, but Zach Bond was just so influential throughout the season. He had 19 and a half tackles for loss, 12 and a half sacks, both team leads. And then he went ahead and had that interception for a touchdown, which was awesome to see, where he kind of tapped it to himself off one hand. And then he also had the force two forced fumbles, which went ahead and on both of those forced fumbles, I want to say at least one of them led to the touchdown for Matt Henningsen. And then the other one, I can't remember when the other one happened, but it might have also led to a score. Bond was all over the field. You know, if in the defensive top plays coming out, you'll see both him and Chris Orr's names littered throughout the article just because of the impact that they had. I think another guy who was kind of underlooked based off of his play was Eric Burrell. I thought he had a tremendous season at safety. Didn't come in starting at the beginning of the year, but he really just kind of flourished in his role, and I'm really excited to see what he can do next year.
Yeah, those are all good mentions. I kind of forgot about Eric Burrell, but he had a lot of big plays that would be worthy of, you know, that nomination. So I think, yeah, Zach Bond is a great answer too. That's kind of who I was deciding between, just given, you know, how big of an impact those guys had as seniors. You know, you expect coming into the season to rely on your seniors and your upperclassmen and your defensive leaders, and those guys didn't disappoint, and that's crucial to a football team's success. And I think that's how they were, you know, were able to get those double-digit wins. You don't do that without dominating effort from, of course, your defensive leaders that way. So we got offensive MVPs, but I forgot one. So we're going to go backwards a little bit. And I wanted to ask, what player, you know, just given what we saw this season, what player are you maybe most excited to see what they will be next season? Maybe just because you saw a glimpse of them, you think they're going to be special with another, you know, year of training under their belt.
I'm excited to see what Leo Chenal does next year. I think he's slated to be the inside linebacker next to Jack Sanborn. I think the two of them can really cause some havoc. Leo Chenal had glimpses where he was in there in the game, stick his nose in there. He can make some big plays. He's fun to watch. He had a couple sacks on the year. I think one sack on the year and a fumble recovery. So I think he's a guy just because of his pedigree. Obviously didn't redshirt this year, one of the lone guys. I think him and Keanu Benton on the offense are my two guys to kind of just see what they can do next year after building upon what they put together this year. Who do you got?
Yeah, I had Keanu Benton written down. Obviously, he's filled in and wasn't. We expected him to, you know, be a rotating guy on the defensive line to, you know, spell Bryson Williams and come in and be a role player. And he kind of merged into not only a starter, but a guy that really showed flashes and made a big impact at some crucial times. So I'm super excited to see what he's going to become, just given that Wisconsin generally, at least in the interior at the nose tackle position, doesn't have, you know, a long history of dominating players at that position. I think Keanu Benton could emerge into that. Obviously, being a true freshman, stepping into that role is a lot for a guy to try and take on and figure out. So I had him written down as my, I don't know if there's a right term for it, but the guy we're most excited to see come this time next year. All right, so we've talked our defensive MVPs, we've talked our special teams, we've given out all of our awards, but now it's time to get into our offensive MVP, and maybe our team MVP will kind of go off of that. But who did you have for your offensive, and then you can kind of just go ahead with your team MVP as well?
Yeah, I think obviously the Wisconsin offense, you know, goes through Jonathan Taylor. Just the way that he, you know, all eyes are on him. He's the top of the chalkboard guy that every defense is looking for, trying to stop. But because of that, I'm going to go with him as the team MVP. You know, obviously 1,900 yards rushing, 26 total touchdowns, was an absolute beast. You know, once again, I thought that this was actually his best year. You know, it might not bear itself statistically, but, you know, you could see his patience and his break tackle ability and his speed just really maximized this season. And he really put himself in a good situation for the pros to make some good money. So I've pivoted in terms of the offensive MVP to go with something different. I went with the duo Jack Cohn and Quintez Cephas. I think Jack Cohn had such a great year, especially with the ineptitude of the quarterback play last year. I mean, he went ahead, had a 70% completion percentage, almost 200 yards a game, over a 4-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. There's not much more you can ask out of the dude. I thought he played exceptionally well and really was able to distribute the ball. And, you know, I think the biggest recipient of that was Quintez Cephas. You know, he balled out this year, 52 catches, over 800 yards and 6 touchdowns. He was a difference maker that Wisconsin really hasn't had in the passing game since, I mean, you can go ahead and say Alex Erickson, Jared Aberderis, but a lot of times though they weren't guys that you could just throw it up to like in that championship game and let him go up against a top corner like Jeff Okuda and out jump the dude and make the play. Like it was something special. He came on so hard this year, and to see the way that those two gelled after such a short off season was crazy. And I thought those two really were the biggest reason for the team's success offensively, because we already knew what Jonathan Taylor was going to do. He was going to do him, and he's the best running back in the country for a reason. But the other two were, great to see because they really helped the Wisconsin offense in a major way.
Yeah, I think we're kind of on the same wavelength. I was thinking that same thing where I had for my offensive MVP, obviously, yes, Jonathan Taylor is the best player on the offense, and there was never any arguing that. But I had Quintez Cephas written down for my offensive MVP. And when I think of MVP, obviously value is its most valuable player. And I think, on the offensive side, Quintez Cephas really brought a lot of value to this team, because I think if you were to subtract Jonathan Taylor, this team would not nearly be as good, but you'd probably still be able to run the ball, decently, with some of the other guys you've got. You just wouldn't be able to do it to the level of Jonathan Taylor. If you didn't have Quintez Cephas on this offense, I don't know where they would have been, because he provided such a passing game threat and such a deep ball threat that you just didn't have from other guys this season. I don't really think, obviously, A.J. Taylor and Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor were big names coming into the season, but I don't think any of those three guys were super stoked about their production this season. But part of that is just because Quintez Cephas was by far the number one option. And part of that, of course, like you said, goes to Jack Cohn and him getting the football. And I know obviously Cohn has gotten a lot of criticism from the fan base this season, which I don't think is at all warranted. I think he's been a lot better than what we've had in these past couple seasons with Alex Hornibrook. And I think he was incredibly efficient. And despite not getting maybe the pat on the backs that he deserves from the fans, he went out and did his thing. So I like what you were thinking. And then, of course, for team MVP, it's without a doubt Jonathan Taylor. He's probably the best, one of the best overall players in the country. I know he didn't get a Heisman invite like we talked about earlier, but he's dominated for three seasons. He's by far the team MVP. I mean, 21 rushing touchdowns, another boatload of yards. I don't even know how many he finished with, because I know it's a lot, just like he's put up the first two seasons. So he's without a doubt the team MVP, but I think that we're kind of both on the same wavelength on that one. So that kind of wraps up our awards, unless you've got anything else you've got down for awards, or else we'll get into this basketball game that I don't think either of us really want to talk about.
Well, just to delay the inevitable, we talked kind of both on the defense about a guy who we're excited to see next year. Anybody on the offense that you're pumped to see, what kind of their progression as the year goes by?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's got to be Nakia Watson. Obviously, he emerged as the number two back this season with Garrett Groshek. I don't know if you can rely on Garrett Groshek to be your number one back. So I think Nakia Watson is going to be a guy that is going to probably be vital to this offense. Obviously, we've had Jonathan Taylor for the past three seasons for pretty much the entirety of the season. And the guarantee is that he's going pro. So I think just given how Wisconsin runs the ball so much, how heavily they rely on it, I think it has to be a guy like him. What about you?
Yeah, I think it's definitely Nakia Watson or Julius Davis if he can get back healthy. Yep. and really kind of make some splash plays. At this point, it's one of those two guys who has got to shoulder the load unless a true freshman comes in and kind of wows everybody. But at this point, with the early signing period being only a week away, Wisconsin still doesn't have a running back commit. So I think it's got to be one of those two guys to really make a step. I think they're both supremely talented. I know Jonathan Taylor has spoke very highly of Nakia Watson, as have his teammates. We'll see if Isaac Garendo can kind of make an impact as well, given his speed and boosted confidence after the Minnesota game. But I think Nakia Watson played really well this year. He averaged 4.5 yards a carry and really showed what he could do. And he can just knock guys over and fall forward. And I think he's got to still increase some of his dynamic capability. But man, oh man, when he hits a hole, he's hitting it hard, and you know he's going to take guys with him. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's going to be obviously big shoes to fill for whoever steps into that role. But just given the history of Wisconsin at running back, they've hit on one after another, you know, without really missing a beat. Obviously, no, I don't think anyone's going to be the next Jonathan Taylor. He's probably going to be, you know, enshrined in Badger glory forever, the way we talk about Ron Dayne, the way we talk about Melvin Gordon and even Monte Ball. So I it's going to be interesting to see how that position plays out. But those, you know, those two guys will definitely need to step up, and I think will be exciting again next season. All right. We've delayed it long enough. It's time to talk. You know, if you guys came for the awards, I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to shut it off at this point, we won't blame you. But we, as a Wisconsin Athletics podcast, we have to talk about the basketball game against Rutgers. So, Matt, I mean, obviously not pretty again. Kind of disappointing given that the Badgers had some momentum after that Indiana win. Came out, probably played their best game of the season against Indiana. Did a lot of things right, but followed it up with the clunker. It's kind of been the back to the MO. So what did you see from this game? What did you think of that Badgers game in Rutgers?
You know, I thought Kobe King played really well. I mean, obviously 18 points. You know, Trevor Anderson was able to bring a spark off the bench. I actually think the bench in general played really well. I would have liked to see some of them be a little more aggressive in the second half after they had made so many good plays in the first half. I know Anderson had 6 in the first half, finished with 11. Pritzel had 6 in the first half, finished with 6. And Tyler Wall really was nowhere to be seen in the second half after playing so well in the first half and really sparking the offense in a lot of ways, as well as the defense with some hustle plays. But, you know, it was once again the turnovers. Wisconsin had 14 on the game, 12 of which in the first half. And then you looked at some of the rebounding numbers, and it was just brutal. I mean, Wisconsin was out-rebounded by 15, 40 to 15, and you saw Rutgers with 14 offensive rebounds, which led to a crazy amount of points. It's just – it was unacceptable, the rebounding output that they had. You know, you got to get your butt into a guy and block out, and too often Wisconsin's just trying to scramble to try to grab the ball. I know that they're undersized right now at times, just simply because Aleem Ford, for everything he can do at times, he is a stretch three for the most part. Right now he's playing the four, and he's not physical enough at this time. Reavers is still not physical at center to get rebounds. I mean, he only had 5 this game. I think he's only averaging around 4 or 5 on the season. And they just weren't able to block out and make the plays necessary on the boards, and they got dominated. So hopefully Micah Potter can bring a rebounding intensity, because man, oh man, if it's anything like this, Wisconsin's going to be about 500 all season long, because other teams have better rebounders than what Rutgers does. Moving ahead, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's not to obviously harp on it, because the Micah Potter ship for this part of the season has already sailed, and you know I think it's kind of died down in terms of the free Micah Potter train, but he would make a huge difference for this team, and that's kind of what you saw again tonight. I mean, obviously the turnovers were bad, but really it wasn't, and it's scary to say this just given how the offense wasn't very good, but it wasn't their worst output of the season, right? It was bad, but it wasn't their worst. I think probably NC State has got to be the worst that you'll hopefully see all season from this team, but it wasn't as bad as they've been at times this season, which is scary in its own right. But it was definitely disappointing, and I think just more so the follow up after that Indiana game. I mean, you weren't expecting for them to come out against Indiana like that, but you definitely weren't expecting them to follow it up the way they did, right?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of dropped an egg tonight. I know they were 1.5 point underdogs in this one, just simply because of the way that they've played in New Jersey as in the last couple matchups. But I mean, the big thing is they actually shot the ball better than Rutgers did on the night in all three phases. You know, they are, I guess, not free throws, but they shot better from the field and from three. The difference was Rutgers took 63 shots, and Wisconsin took 48. I mean, the offensive rebounds and the turnovers were absolutely killer on Wisconsin, and it just led to too many times where Rutgers was able to get the extra shot and be able to put the ball in the basket. I mean, you give any team 15 extra possessions, I can almost guarantee you're going to lose. Like, yeah. The fact that they were only down seven, when you gift a team seven extra possessions, you know, or 15 extra possessions, is amazing. You know, they need to be better in the little things, which has been, you know, their MO this year. Like you said, you know, the little things have been hurting them. And obviously the shooting hasn't been great. They only shot 34.8% from three and took 23 shots from behind the arc. But, you know, it's shooting wasn't the dire issue in this one. It was the empty possessions that they took and some decision making and the inability to get rebounds.
Yeah. It's kind of the same. It's not so much that they consistently do the same thing wrong, where it's one thing. They just do a lot of things poorly. And that's what really hurts this team, is that when one thing's finally kind of figured out, something else starts to hamper them. And when that gets figured out, it's something else. And then they sprinkle in a big win against an undefeated team, and they hook you back in, and then they followed up with that. But really, for this team, I know we're kind of back to sink or swim, because the schedule does not lighten up at all over the next, you know, couple weeks. I know they've got Rider sprinkled in there, but and UW-Milwaukee coming up on Saturday, but they've got road trips to Tennessee and then Ohio State, and then they've got somebody tough after that. I can't think of who it is, but it doesn't get any easier.
Yeah, Illinois, who's going to be tough. But I mean, they've got 10 days now, because they don't actually play until next Saturday against Milwaukee. But, I mean, they need to take these next 10 days to really figure some stuff out, because, you know, you're going to have a holiday break for a bit, and you got finals coming up and whatnot. But they got to be able to make sure that they're hitting the hardwood and they're cleaning up some of these issues. Micah Potter's coming back against Milwaukee, which I know will – be exciting, and it'll be great. I'm interested to see if he's slotted into the starting lineup for a Liam Ford, because he's more of a natural four, or if he is instead comes off the bench, which, you know, like I said, actually played fairly well tonight. But things have got to be better if Wisconsin wants to contend in the Big Ten, because, I mean, you said it when you said Ohio State. They've got Ohio State, Illinois, Penn State, Maryland, Michigan State. You know, back to back to back to back. And Penn State just beat Maryland. Michigan State's loaded. You know, Illinois has some of the best guards in the country, and definitely in the Big Ten. And Ohio State's ranked third in the country. I mean, this isn't getting any easier, especially when you pair Tennessee, who's ranked 19th as well. You got two gimmies that you gotta blow out the water and clean some stuff on, and you gotta gel quick, because you're at Tennessee in 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like you said, the tough schedule with the Tennessee one, four of those games are away. So it's not like you're playing at your home court, where the Badgers historically have always played better. You're on the road in some pretty, pretty tough environments. Obviously, Michigan State is a very tough one, and, you know, Ohio State is developing into, I think, a top tier, you know, basketball program under Chris Holtmann. So it's not going to get any easier for this team. So obviously Michael Potter being back will help, but I don't know if it's going to make as big of a difference as they might need. So where this team goes from here is anyone's best guess, but that kind of wraps up our basketball talk. There's not a lot to talk about from that game. Obviously we hit on the disappointments, and the bench, I think, was probably the biggest positive. But other than that, you know, there's still just a lot of things to fix up. So, guys, that wraps up our week in, you know, our recap award show and then our basketball talk. Obviously, next week we will be back with, I think on Tuesday, we might do just some college football landscape talk, talk bowl games, talk stuff like that to get you guys a show. And then on Thursday, obviously with, you know, signing day coming up next week, getting started on that. We've got some fun stuff in the works. Nothing has been finalized with a lot of that, but Matt and I have been kicking around ideas for what we want to do to give you guys the recruiting coverage, because we know that that's a big driver on the website. And so hopefully you guys will find our, you know, signing day recruiting podcast just as interesting. So we've got some stuff in the works, and we're pretty excited about that. Thank you guys for listening. As always, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Wisconsin. Thank you.